Welcome, everybody, to the first MTG PodQuest Roundtable. Today we have Main Loop, Gazmaster, and the Planeswalker coach, Paladin Robin. I asked them about the new mechanics and the new Planeswalkers we just had drop this week, and then we also talk about the MTGPQ meta as a whole. Well, they've been in the green room for a while, making themselves all pretty. Let's bring them out. Hope you enjoy. All right, welcome to the MTGPQ Roundtable. This is the first episode. I have three guests with me. Go ahead and introduce yourselves.
Okay, sounds good. Hey, everybody. Hi, Gaz. My name is Gazmaster. It's my gamer name. My actual gamer name is Gaz, but it wasn't available. I do content related to the subject matter, or at least closely related to Magic the Gathering Puzzle Quest. You can find any and all videos you'd like to just ignore on YouTube or in my Discord server, which is Discord/, I think it's Gazmaster. Not sure, though. I'll double check. I'll send you guys a link.
I'm Main Loop, aka Maynard T Loop on Gazmaster server. and you could just find me on YouTube. I think you just search on YouTube Main Loop MTGPQ, but you can find me in just about every Discord, all the main ones at least. So
yeah, hey, it's good to be back on the show. I'm Paladin Robin. I do a YouTube channel called Planeswalker Coach. I try to just give as much help out there to the new players, to the advanced players. I show a lot of decks. I do some reviews, that kind of thing, to help to, bridge the gap and just help everybody to enjoy the game as much as we do.
Yep, and we've been trying to get something together where we're just kind of all talking about the game. It's hard to get everyone's schedule jibing, and somehow tonight it just worked out. So
the stars aligned.
Okay, so let's talk about Murders at Karloff Manor. I know that we've all done a lot of content on this. I don't want to sound like we're really kind of flooding on this, but I want to get your impressions, though, on the mechanics. Now that we've had this for a few weeks, we've all been playing with it pretty heavily. I think, is it four mechanics? We've got the disguise reveal, mm-hmm. case, collect evidence, and suspect.
Yeah.
Is suspect really... I'm going to go to that one first, because I don't know if I've ever actually played with this or thought about this mechanic in the game while playing the game. Anybody want to jump in on that and explain to me why suspect is a thing?
I can, but I think we're going to use the rest of the hour on this, is just as far as mechanics that I may not necessarily be enjoying. So the views expressed by Gaz are not necessarily those of Nerdthuggery or any of its affiliates. So please don't hold anything he says against him in a court of law. It's strictly for entertainment purposes only. Suspect. All right, let's get into it. There's a lot of things, especially with like the Planeswalkers that WebCore gives us. Shout out to WebCore. Thank you guys for all the content you guys give us. It's awesome.
Shout out.
But when we look at certain mechanics, we've asked for years to say, hey, can you guys give us a sample of it in advance, or give some, like, let us gameplay it and test it in advance so we can see how ineffective or effective it could be. And this is one of those mechanics where they wasted man hours on putting something like this together. And it's, in and of itself, it's not necessarily bad in my opinion. I'm really curious to hear your guys' opinions on it. It's just every instance of implementation, every way that they've used it is like counterproductive. My one example I'll give before I hand it over is you especially with like the Planeswalker, I forget which one it is that we just got. I think it's
Kaya.
So mm-hmm. she does this thing where like her ultimate or whatever, you give those creatures suspect, and then you have your creatures get defender or something like that are on the board, but you can't block them. So you're actually enabling your opponent to do more damage against you, which is counterintuitive. It doesn't give you a benefit. Why do it? That's enough. That's a snippet from my next outcoming book, the Ides of Suspect. Please, Maynard, enlighten us.
I've only ever used exactly one card that has suspect, and that's Agris Kos. Mm. And it kind of just works for it because it's kind of self-sustaining, right? It gives a creature suspect, and then it exiles it the next turn. So it's basically just like a delayed removal. And that's pretty much the only time I can remember ever using any card that has suspect on it, to be honest. I mean, can you guys? I don't.
Robin, do you have any opinion there?
You know, I'm thinking about suspect, right? And I'm thinking, yeah, suspect is kind of suspect. I don't see myself using that a whole lot. You know, I think it basically gives, you know, you can't block with that creature, which I guess you can use it in with some creatures that will tend to get themselves killed. That could be one use. But, you know, I think menace is the other one that they get. That one, I don't know if there's a whole you know, big market for Menace. So in that way, I think Suspect is, it's a little suspect, but it's one of those that it had some potential to look like.
How did Suspect is a Little Suspect not end up being the title of any of you guys' videos?
Because we were waiting for Paladin Robin to take his seat at the council and share his brilliance with us directly. It was beautiful. Well done, sir.
Right on. Hey, I'm here.
Okay, which of these, let's go to Disguise and Case, because I think it's between those two. I don't think it's going to be Collect Evidence. Which of those two do you think is really going to be the one that, or maybe both, that really stays with the game beyond this set?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, I don't like this mechanic at all. It's so clunky. Disguise reveal. Yeah. I pretty much never play a card with the disguise. Like, I never play it cloaked. So, because every time I've tried to do it that way, I just delay whatever effect I'm going to get from the creature that I would have just played normally. There's never any real benefit to playing it that way. It's just a 2/2 creature that just kind of sits there and doesn't do a lot until you flip it. And it's just so difficult to flip. You have to have enough mana in your hand to do it. And it's kind of hard to keep track of how much mana you need to even flip it too. So it's pretty unreliable, and the effects never really justify it for me.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. That's what I've been having too. That's my experience. You know, I think it's vulnerable, right? As soon as you put it down, it's kind of vulnerable because it's not able to have the whatever abilities that you're going to use to protect it. And then, like you said, it's hard to use with the mana that you need to have in your hand. And then at that point, you're just, we're talking about, okay, we need to have a good return on the investment, really, right? That reveal ability has to be good enough to justify me putting him out there in a way that's vulnerable and then collecting that extra mana. And sometimes the mana cost is a little bit more than you would expect. And it's just, there's only a few, I think, that would just justify using that reveal ability. So kind of interesting. I got to play with it more, but I think it's a interesting one at this point.
I agree. I think that our overall take on Disguise has been underwhelming. As far as what I've seen, now I've built a couple of specific decks with Disguise. I use Cross and Cloud Scraper, and I threw in Experiment 12 with that so that she actually synergizes off of it. It works. It's fun. But like Maynard said, my main man Maynard said, it's a delayed impact. So that's the only build that I've put together, and I'll put it together in a video for folks to see, that actually works with the disguise mechanic, and it bumps up really, really quickly. The question is, you know, you got to compare that. I think it's a victim. The mechanic is a victim of the size of the meta, which I think is a completely separate conversation we can have, where there's so many great like OP cards and builds and synergies that are in the game right now, that if you get something that's good, like Kraus and Cloudscaper can be good, it just pales in comparison to a 15-15 Galta that hits the board, nukes the board with green, and then fills your hand and starts loops, and you just dominate the game. It's fun, right? Like, this is one thing I got lectured by somebody in one of my videos because of how negative I had been. Thanks, Nathan. I appreciate it, man. I truly do listen to the feedback. In that I'm so negative on them, but there's a fun factor too that goes into it. Is it fun? It can be, as long as you're not getting pwned by the meta. The only card that I will say for disguise is the last thing is Aurelia's Vindicator. That card's
I love that card.
It's so good. But it's not good because of disguise, right? It's good just because it's a good card. Same with Crossing's Cloudscraper. You don't need to flip it to get the benefit of it. The only reason you do it is for Experiment 12, which, again, fun, but am I going to go trust my weekend coalition points, most precious, precious perfect scores? I think not, sir.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, guys, I had to look up that. While Robin was speaking, I looked up that card because that was the one card, the Crows and Cloud Scraper, is the one card that I've used that on. I'm fortunate enough to pull it. It's a masterpiece. Mm. And it works for that card because on the reveal, well, first of all, when I look at a card with disguise, right away you're doing the math, right?
Yeah.
Is the reveal going to give me an advantage in the mana? Okay.
Right.
So my net cost of mana on the reveal for Crows and Cloudscaper, as opposed to simply just casting it out, is I'm saving 5 mana. it's going to take me a turn to do it, and I'm risking having it removed. But you know, it's going to, but I'm going to save 5 mana. It's going to be 25 instead of 30. Okay, put that aside. And then also on the reveal, it reinforces. So on that one card, I see an advantage. I don't, there, obviously there's other cards out there. You guys mentioned one. I don't think I have that one. But does that have to be, you know, a mechanic, or could that just simply have been something installed in as a property of the card?
The only thing that I'll add to that is if they'd improved the payoff, right? Like if they made the payoff so much better to do it, then it's worth the delay. Cause it's not, I think the one thing maybe the devs don't fully understand yet is it isn't the cost of mana even to get the creature on the board. Cause it's green. Mm-hmm. We can cheat it out in a bunch of different ways in this meta. But the other side of that is I'm putting that creature at risk. Like Paladin said, we're putting that creature on the board and we're risking it, right, for a turn. That's a big cost. We're risking losing all of that stored mana and momentum and card draw and card advantage and yada yada for that flip. And it's got to be better and easier to flip over. If they reduced it by 10, that'd be a beast card. I think more people would play with it.
The cost of revealing a card is probably way over costed for all the drawback that comes along with that. If they halved maybe the casting cost or the reveal cost of all of these, maybe it'd be a little bit more manageable. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah, I totally agree.
And we're playing against Greg. I mean, if you're playing against a human opponent, you know that card doesn't last.
Right.
You know, you as soon as you see a disguise card on there, you're getting rid of it if you're sitting across the board from somebody. But it's Greg, and so, you know, we can sneak it by from time to time.
Stupid Greg.
For those who don't know, anyways. Okay, so the last one is Case, and I think this one may be the one that's I don't even know if I want to call it a mechanic, more of a quality of some of these cards, but this one's a little bit different, probably better received, certainly more cards that are taking advantage of it. Well, how about you, Robin?
Yeah, you know what? I do like Case. There's been a few that I've found to be quite useful. You know, Case of the Locked Hothouse, I think, is a really good one, right? You get the case, you know, I guess we call it the case solved. And once that's solved, then, you know, you get your creatures reinforced, right? So that's real nice. That's worth putting in the effort. And there's a few. So I think the Case of the Uneaten Feast is also another good one, right? You have the ability to really use that card in a way that's going to just dominate your opponents. And even if you don't decide to go with the solved emblem on that one, you can use it to just continue to gain life. You know, so I really do like the cases. I think that's one that, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing more of in a future set, because I think that one has some really good outcomes that you can use. And it's one of those that just really makes this I guess new set just makes it a really exciting set that's got that flavor to it, right? And I do like it.
Yeah, I agree. I think Case, they did a really good fun job with it. It's very similar. It's its own unique card. I think that's really what I like about it. It's a very unique mechanic, both in paper as well as how they ported it into PQ. And it's relevant for what we're doing inside of PQ, which, you know, again, we lecture them all the time. It's a different game from paper. But they did a good job with this. I think the other side of that, too, the mechanic itself is fine. Very similar to story modes or chapters where you have three. And then they go away. In many of these instances, they kind of, the card's destroyed or the support's destroyed after you solve the case. But where they made a mistake with the previous ones we were talking about, where they got right in the case, is the payoff is so good in some of these that it makes it worth the delay, the stall, the fun play. And it's fun. Mm-hmm. So it gives you that little bit of chance. And if I could just do this, it'll make things work. You know, I throw up Case of Ransacked Lab, right? That's a fun one. Because of the loops it causes, even if they are smaller casting spells, it just enables a lot of little things. But in and of itself, it's not really broken by itself. I will throw this out at the devs. I'm back in the Octagon days, back in my days, we used to get those ones that the devs would throw out there. And it's like, they clearly didn't play this card. They just thought that sounds cool. They put a bunch of neat words on there and they didn't really weigh how it would break the game completely. And I like those things. And I know they need to get nerfed, but they're a lot of fun. Webcore hasn't really let that happen. There's bug broken things that don't work as intended and they just don't work at all, but it doesn't break the game as a whole. It just affects that card. So if you're going to have it one way or the other, I prefer they had no bugs, but that's a good way to go. Anyways, that's enough on Case. I think that's by far the clear winner in the game so far.
Yeah, Case is cool. It's like you guys, I mean, pretty much kind of just reiterating what everyone else is saying, is that it's kind of a neat little game within the game as you're playing to solve the cases. So the fun factor comes in there. And then the payoff is pretty good, like Paladin Robin said. Case of the Locked Hot House, I've used a little bit. I also like Case of the Uneaten Feast. Played around a bit with Ransacked Lab. I think, I did a video on that. Yeah. Some of the other uncommon cases are pretty decent too. Like the one that gives your creatures double strike and haste. Was it Shattered Pact? Yeah, I think that's what it is. But pretty quality mechanic as far as what we've compared them to so far.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, it was Shattered Pact that has that.
Mm. Good card. I haven't played with it yet. It's a good card. There's so many cards in this set I haven't even touched yet. I'm like, I can't wait to get to that. IRL. Thanks.
You know, I was actually counting the cards in the set. I thought this set is huge. There's 289 cards right now.
Yeah.
It's the largest set in Standard with the exception of New Capena.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Huh. I think it has 20 more cards, but it's 289 cards. And I've gotten through maybe 100 of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I there's so many of mine that still say new and I haven't played with them because I haven't messed with the synergy much. I figured a lot of people would go for some of the bigger, better cards. And I went and started playing with Reveal and Disguise. And no, there's no video out on that yet. So follow whatever Maynard and Althi and Paladin Robin are doing. And they've got the definite better stuff so far.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of cards. It's a really big set. And I think when you take a look at some of these cards, it kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier, Gaz, right? About the payoff. And I wonder if that's some of the reasons for myself why I haven't used a lot of these cards. Like, I'm wondering if the payoff is going to be worth it. And it's kind of like Disguise, right? I don't know if the payoff's worth it, so I'm not going to go with those. But then, some of them, they look good, right, for these cases. And yeah, the payoff looks good. It's worth it, right? So I'll go for it. But it's a giant set, and it's time consuming to actually go through all of those and just kind of figure out what's going to be worth it.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said before, I think a whole conversation we could be had is just about the nature of a 3-year standard rotation with so many ridiculously powerful cards in the set, which I love. I'm not commenting negatively about that, but we have a 10 card deck and you only have so much room for cards. And right now, every now and then we get to stages in the meta where it's like a card can't do a singular thing in your deck anymore. If you want to keep up in the meta, your cards have to do multiple things. And if you have cards dead in hand, it's very plausible that Greg can just dumb luck his butt into beating you down and you're just stuck with dead cards in hand and that's just not viable anymore. So anyways, I digress. Sir?
No, that's a good point though, I think. I mean, you're basically saying that you got to have all these cards in your hand that do more than one thing. And that's kind of one of the reasons I really like Vanguards, right? Because you got up to 3 things that one card can do for you and it's so valuable.
Eager to play with the new Vanguards too. I think I've messed with a couple of them, but they've all been bugged. So we'll put another note on that for another conversation. They're so buggy. Oh my gosh, buggy.
All right. So let's look at the Planeswalkers that are out already. I know there's one that's kind of on deck and that's the one I'm waiting to get my hands on. Mm-hmm. But let's look at Kaya Spirit's Justice is the first one we got from this set. Paladin Robin, I want to start with you. What are your... let's go with the letter grades that we like to put on these. Where are you sitting right now on Kaya?
You know, I think she's got some advantages. I have to say one of the advantages that I like for Kaya is that she's the planeswalker that goes with the black and white. And I think white is one of the most balanced colors. And when you take a look at white, right, it's got the defense with cards like, you know, the ones that will have the prevent damage, you got some good removal there. And then you got some really good offense, right? With the white going, you know, heavy on the double strike a lot of times. So that's really a nice balanced color. And then the black, I do like black because it's a good control color. It does have a lot of removal. but then you see a lot of good creatures there, right? So I think just based on the colors, Kaya's a really good one. You can play with that Planeswalker in several different ways. And, you know, it's just one of those that's going to be a lot of fun. I have all the Kaya's except for one, and I won't mention which one, but I think those, you know, there's a real good synergy that you can put together with several cards that are that white and black. So I really do like her just based on the colors, and you can take a look at the mana bonuses just based on that. I think that's one of those that you can buy and just feel comfortable with, you know, regardless of if you're going to build for some of the themes she will present. So I do like her. She's a very flexible planeswalker.
How about you guys?
With respect to the delegate from the Paladin Robin clan, I found myself looking at Kaya with a very different lens. I think it's kind of known my preferences on dual color walkers, and power and speed are my focuses. You got to win quick, and it just helps to go get resources, et cetera, et cetera. We'll get into a philosophy debate another time. For me, a couple things that stand out good about her. We'll start there. I love her health, 140. She's the biggest, bigger than dragons, bigger than gods. Okay. Kaya the spirit, you know, justice, you know, take all the life you can handle, lady. I'm cool with it. So that's great. What I found when I was playtesting her, and I have in a video that's yet to be released, is that I needed that extra 40 life over 100 just to kind of set the stuff up. I tried to do jankily to really emphasize her, her abilities. And that really kind of deterred me from her. The high cost of her first and second were another thing that just made it a little more clunky. And you either got the cards to break her or you don't. And that is Wish and Faithbound Judge. And there's one of the uncommon world killers that gives you 10 loyalty, or Host of Herons. Sigarda Host of Herons is another card that are just loyalty ramp for you. Then that makes it to where you can do her thirds. But as I mentioned earlier, and I won't repeat myself, just about how janky the third ultimate is, for it just didn't synergize well. And I have a lot of suggestions I would recommend for how to fix that kind of stuff. I actually think her third is costed well, but I don't find that it, I don't know. I didn't have a very good time playing with her very much. And her mana gains, I think all dual color walkers need to be +5 in their main colors. I think that's an advantage to dual colors. Give me -2 to the other off colors, and then give me the green at +2. I'd be fine with that. But as it sits right now, there are, again, the meta is so strong, even janky planeswalkers can win dominantly. What separates a good planeswalker from a bad planeswalker for me is how quickly can I get those cards out. And that extra mana in their main colors makes a difference. It's a difference between getting out a card and not. So I rest my case. Maynard?
Took the words out of my mouth right there with that one. Yeah, no, I totally agree. So yeah, grade-wise, I think I put her in kind of like a solid, like B, maybe B minus range. Her abilities can be strong. I don't even remember what her second ability does, to be honest, but her first is pretty good, but man, is it overcosted. The third one, I love, you know, being able to exile all of my opponent's creatures right away like that, and it gives you some other nice things. So those are her strengths, but yeah, I just prefer the other Kaya's that I have. She's kind of just boring to me, this newer one. She's not as fun as the other ones I have. She's like not as unique. Like at least Kaya 1 has that really interesting win con where you can kill your opponent just by exiling cards and all that. And then yeah, the other Kaya I have, the one from All Be One, has really good mana gains, like you were saying, that +5 on black and white. So yeah, it's like what Gods was saying, that extra 40 life is great because you're going to need it. And yeah, what is up with that? Were they just tired of us complaining about the low life totals with these planeswalkers before? Is that why they threw us a bone with that one?
I know, she's big one, right? I was surprised myself.
Absolutely. Hey, I want to throw in an asterisk to my comment there. I usually give lower grades on planeswalkers when they come out. If they don't immediately impress me, I give them a pretty low grade. I actually give Kaya a C- to a D grade rating. Now, my asterisk is this. Maynard will go build a deck with something and totally find a way that synergizes with them. Like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And then they jump into the A category for me. So I'm just waiting for Maynard to go build a deck for me, is really my point.
Well, we were both a little bit kind of low on Teferi L. Jackson at first, I think. Mm-hmm. And then he just really grew on us both, right?
He's
like,
amazing.
I think he's like an S-tier walker now.
I agree. That first ability in this meta is uncanny. It is so good. Anyways, that's not the point of our podcast. Let's get the rails back on the yeah. tracks here.
Yeah, I didn't have a black white. Well, I had Soren. What was that? Soren.
Grim Nemesis.
Thank you.
The greatest planeswalker to walk the plains. He makes Soren great again. He's my first dual color planeswalker I ever bought, and I have videos dedicated to making him great, and it never works.
Well, I played him ad nauseum for about 3 weeks, and I was like, oh, Dakund. Okay. And so that became my black white.
Right.
And then,
all right. The final thing I'll say about Soren Grim Nemesis, what I actually play him a lot still, because at Platinum, every 10th level that you get to, you get a free non-dupe standard pack. In him, you can build an all creature deck. So him and Samet the Tested, and there's another planeswalker I always forget. I think it's Dovin. But you can build a 10 creature build, and you can go play like Fox Punching or whatever it is. And you can go just master those cards. So I play him a lot in those still. Other than that, just don't buy him.
All right, let's move on to Yugen the Ineffable. Who's for, how about main loop?
Get Maynard.
Yeah, he's a really weird planeswalker, isn't he? He's there's really not any other planeswalker quite like him, but if you think getting Kaya out is slow, just wait till you start messing with Yugen, because those mana gains, if you don't have a way to get them pumped up in any way, you're just going to be struggling the whole time and just hoping that you get enough loyalty to get to his third ability, which, I mean, it's a beast. I do like that third ability a lot, but it seems like you just have to kind of delay your fun with him when you're using him, because it just takes so long. And then he just kind of explodes from there, and he gets really cool and fun to play with. But that just even getting to his third ability can be brutal sometimes.
Robin.
Yeah, you know what? I do agree. I think it's an interesting planeswalker. There's some strengths, obviously, because you can use pretty much any card. But it's tough to make use of those abilities, you know. So when I put together my review video for that one, I was kind of stuck, and it was like, okay, what am I gonna do? I don't really know. So let's see if we can do something with, you know, putting together all of those Phyrexian toxin tokens, or maybe all in one turn. So that was kind of how I used Yugen there. But it's a difficult one to strategize for. I guess it's one of those where it does start slow, but if you have the patience and you have the deck, you can definitely build it up, and it gets stronger as the game goes on. But, you know, for me, I'm kind of like Gauss in this way, where I would like to win soon, because if you don't win soon, your opponent, you're just giving them chances to do something that they want to do. And that's just not a good way to win, right? We don't want to give them chances to put their combo out or lock you down in a certain way. Exactly, you know? So yeah, for me, it's just one of those that it's a tough one to build for, but there's some advantages. You know, like I said, you can use all the cards.
Yeah. 100%. I actually agree with you a lot on that, Paladin. I think that the challenge with him is building out those cards. Oh, actually, quick shout out. If you guys listening to this haven't seen Paladin Robin's video on getting all of the toxin tokens out in one turn, it's so awesome. You guys have to go check it out. It's really good.
Thanks.
I actually liked Yugen. So my video was going to be a double spotlight on Kaya and Yugen, and then they both left the vault. So I said, why am I doing this? I'll wait for the gold stuff to come out, but I'll release it. But I basically had a spirits war between them to see who could actually get the spirits out better. Yugen beat her handily. Maybe I liked him because I was comparing him to Kaya, and I'm like, hey, he's not so bad. Terrible. But I actually enjoyed his kit. I thought it was a good set of abilities if you have the right cards.
Right.
And that's the key thing, is that there really has to be a question when I'm evaluating planeswalkers, is are they good on their own? Can I throw in random garbage into them and they'll synergize and work in some way just on their own abilities? And if the answer is no, how difficult is it to have the cards specifically to go do the thing? I have all the cards. I literally have all the cards every set. So I can go and put, I have a unique you know, opportunity to go through and build based on everything. Not everybody has that kind of set collection. So I really try to go through and build peasant builds with limited cards and certain mechanics that they have. And when I built for him peasant wise, it was a real struggle. My mythics, of course, they crushed. There's tons of cards to go do that with. But at the peasant level, it was really a struggle to put anything together for him that worked. That said, I still think he's janky enough and I like him. And then the final equation into that is, I only have so much time in the real world to play the game. So am I going to play Ugin, you know, especially if I'm trying to just route through my matches to get my rewards? Is he a fast walker to win with? And the answer to that is no. He's definitely one of those ones that if it matches your play style, if you enjoy those types of builds, if spirits is your thing, he executes that really, really well. It just takes a little while to do, like Maynard said.
I got to say, with Ugin, I'm total Brokeback Mountain. I can't quit this thing. I'm
really
trying to figure him out.
Really?
Okay, the new event, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, it started Following the Clues.
Mm-hmm.
The top node has an objective there to win in more than 12 turns. So it's counting the turns for me where I don't have to keep checking. So I put Ugin up there. It's standard. And I did everything I could possibly do, actually not to stretch it out to 12, but to see how quick I could win the game. All six games, nine turns. All six games, nine turns. And standard, that's not going to win any standard, So I can't figure him out. Now in Legacy, I've got him so that he's an A minus planeswalker. Mm-hmm. But in Standard, God, I'm trying to get him out of C and I can't.
You know, that's an interesting point that you make up there. Like in Legacy, I never mention Legacy because they're, you know, if you have all the cards out there, it's everything can be broken in Legacy. I mean, Fibblethip can be broken in Legacy. No one should buy Fibblethip. Do not buy Fibblethip, please. For the love of all that's holy. That guy's awful, but he wins in Legacy. So I usually try to limit the cards to what's in Standard to make it work. But with him specifically, and just how bad all of that was, yeah, it's pretty rough. Now, I will say this. His biggest setback is his mana gains, but you can offset that with Sunken Citadel and then the Hall of Gemstones so that you can boost those up temporarily to kind of ramp stuff up. But again, you got to have specific cards, and if that's the case, it does not make a great Planeswalker.
Yeah. You know what? So I have a question for everybody here. It's true or false? Every deck that you build for with Ugin, you're going to need Sunken Citadel.
Why is the best land card in Standard Sunken Citadel and why? or what's the best land card in Standard right now and why is it Sunken Citadel?
I honestly think it's true, though, because
you
need to pump up those mana bonuses.
That card goes in every build. Again, my play style, I love stuff that hits a hand. And the other one is the ley line card. That ley line land, just drawing it, especially against dual and tricolor walkers. I'm feeding my hand with mana. I love that card. And I haven't heard anybody else really talking about it as kind of a broken card. It's one of my favorite cards from the set so far.
Let's look at the new walker that just came out yesterday, was it? Or today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trails Sting. Who's first on this one?
Paladin.
Who's played with her the most so far?
I haven't
probably
touched her.
Me.
Yeah, I haven't touched her. Yeah, well, you just go, main.
Yeah. So her abilities are pretty interesting. Looking at them when they first came out, when we first got the preview on them, I was like, okay, these are all right. I think I can do some interesting things with them, and. What I found her to be is like for a mono black walker, she's really like reliant on creatures either being on your side or theirs. And she can be pretty fun and fairly powerful if you keep that in mind. But that's not really how I normally like to play mono black. I mean, I usually am doing things that have to deal more with creature-less win cons and stuff if I'm even going that route. So it's taken a little bit of getting used to, but I'm actually having a pretty decent time messing around and figuring out what works for her and what doesn't. That the mana spread, how do you guys feel about having one dominant color and having no other colors really have much of a impact? Because for me, I don't like having to spend so much of my deck just getting around that, like either making sure I have a bunch of black gems on the board or pumping up the rest of my mana to or mana gains to counteract that.
Go ahead, Paladin.
Yeah. I think it's just the personality of this planeswalker, right? I think she just wants to go fast, and she gives you that eight for the black. And it's to me, it's kind of like, why not go for it then, right? I mean, she's giving you two. You might as well go hard on the black, convert gems and all of that. It's a good question, though, because I think she can be dominant in that way. And I think I'm sure a lot of people would want to see a little more spread, but I'm okay with it. I like the eight.
Yeah, I dig it. So, you know, another caveat, I'm not a big fan of mono walkers. That's Nalthazar. Nalthi loves mono walkers. And in more mature metas, I play with them. They're fun, at least especially when I get bored. But I'm not keen on big on mono walkers. But to answer your question, Maynard, I call him Maynard. Everyone's like, his main, why do you call him Maynard? I don't know. One day I just said, your name's Maynard T. Loop. And that's what he is in my Discord. And I just love it. I think it's hilarious. So Maynard, my main man. I like what I've seen so far of her. I have not yet played with her. And to answer your mana bonus questions, I think with, again, Sunken Citadel, you just kind of auto include that. So you get the +2 bonuses. So you really are ramping your green and your red to +3 each. You're getting +10 on black. And then, you know, I don't think it gives one to the white there, but that kind of offsets it a bit and makes it good. But again, you're dedicating one of your 10 cards, 10% of your deck, just to offset that. For me, it's enough for one. Maybe I would throw a Leyline in if I'm going to do some loopy deck, but based on what I'm looking at for the walker right now, you got to have creatures that are going to synergize with that because it's all based on creatures. I don't know. I got to see how it plays, but I can see how it could be abused. There's enough black creatures and black stuff right now. And I think I found a bug with Mask of Grizzleband. I played earlier today in PvP. That it did something I did not expect. And if it's true, it's something I'm probably going to try to test out with Vraska because I think it would be awesome without using expletive. It will be pretty cool. It'll be pretty fun. But yeah, does that answer your question, Maynard?
Think so.
Hope so. Somewhere in there.
Yeah. No, I mean, just for me, if I don't have a land or something like that, a gem converter out early, I just struggle with getting like 3 mana per turn or whatever if I don't have something like that to offset. So I was just wondering if anybody else had that experience with those types of walkers.
Yeah, I just what I said, as far as the mana bonuses are concerned, I prefer not to. I don't try to. It's like lands in general. I normally don't play lands that hit the board and convert stuff at the beginning of my turn, right? I don't like that. Sunken Citadel is a great land for me because it impacts the board on entry, plus it does conversion, right? So that's the double thing I was talking about earlier. So that has function. The other one too, Leyline of whatever, the guild pack, just enters. I don't think people realize how broken that a mechanic is. Just overload, entering your hand, destroy all your opponent's gems on the, yes, baby Jesus, please. That's awesome. And then when it's on board, it's overcosted, but when it hits the board, it does the conversions too. It's just so good, man. So I don't play with lands and mana conversions that way, but between those and, you know, again, Hall of Gemstones is for green, but you get a lot of good ways to go increase your mana bonuses in there. And I think that
Cryptex is good on this.
Yeah. Oh, Cryptex. Yeah. That's the other one. I knew there was another one. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
There you go. Cryptex. Yeah. Those three. You know what's funny? That card is good. I haven't played it yet because the other two cards take up my land slots because I need the other cards, the other 70% of my deck, to actually do the thing to win. So
what I like to do with Leyline is overflow it, like you were saying, and then just bring it back with one of those, either connect the dots or Aurelia's Vindicator from the Exile.
Yes, so much synergy. So you
just get it out for free. Yeah,
that's so cool. That's a good move.
Yeah, it's beast, man. I'm telling you, it's still young because not everybody has all the cards yet. This is the thing we have to watch as the meta matures, especially after the next set comes out and people are able to booster craft a lot of cards from this set. You're going to see the power level in people's decks you're going to face in Greg get really, really powerful because they're just getting the cards first and then they're going to synergize those builds. And once they have them, we're going to lose a lot more. Our lose percentages are going to go up. It's going to be harder to go flawless in the games without them.
Especially if you keep making videos showing them how to do it.
That's my job. Don't take it from me. I got one deal in life. That's my calling. Here's my sign.
Okay, guys. Any favorite cards right now, new cards right now that you're playing with at this very moment that's taking up a lot of your attention? Let's go with Gaz.
Oh, actually start with Paladin because I actually got to pull it up.
Let's go with Paladin.
Yeah, you know what? So I'm kind of thinking through my head what I'm liking right now in the standard. This is not one of the newer cards, but I'm really starting to like the Wish card, our Golden Wish. I think that's such a nice card, especially if you can control the artifact that comes out and if you can control the Vanguard that comes out, right? So kind of what I'll do is I'll say, okay, I'll play the Golden Wish, and the only artifact that I'm going to have in that deck is going to be the Pyromancer Goggles, so that we can probably chain it together and then put some more of these other things down, right? And what I'm talking about specifically is the Vanguard, right? So I want to make sure I can load up on that Vanguard. There's a couple of good Vanguards that I like. Jace the Perfected Mind is a really good one. So I'll just include those three in a deck, the Golden Wish, Pyromancer Goggles, and the Jace the Perfected Mind. And it's so awesome because that Jace the Perfected Mind, that third ability, that just destroys people in a deck like that. You know, so that's kind of what I'm stuck on now. There's been a couple that I've been working on, but that's the one I'm really just enjoying right now.
How about you, Maynard?
One of the cards I already just mentioned, but I just got Connecting the Dots last week, and I've just been running that in everything I can right now. Just trying to I mean, it's one of the cards. I think it was probably like my main rare chase card when I was looking at the spoilers, and it's really lived up to the hype for me. It's just the only drawback is I wish it bring back more than just one card at a time, but I mean, that's just me being greedy at this point, because just one free card just for throwing it out of my hand and just getting it right back to the board for no cost whatsoever. It just speeds up red so much. I've just been building a lot of decks just revolving around Exile, like with Savior and Aurelia's Vindicator and all that. It just draw a bunch of cards, throw them all in your exile, and just bring them all back for free, either by the end of your turn or the next turn. It's just crazy. What do you got, guys?
So I think you guys got that I like Leyland of the Guild Pack. That's probably one of my most utility cards because it's five color. I like a lot of utilities. I look at it in several different stages and win cons, but like utility or actual win con or enabler draw, you know, or oppression. But Leyland of the Guild Pack is good. It just goes in anything. I love that. Connecting the Dots is a stud card. I think it's absolutely top five card of the set so far for me. Mm-hmm. I do love Case of the Ransacked Lab. Ill-Timed Explosion, I really like a lot. It's actually, what's funny is one of the things I do, I have a list of all of the chase cards. I still have to work on this one for this set. But one of the subcategories is it legacy impacting? Can this card actually swing in legacy? Ill-Timed Explosion is a legacy impacting card. If you have the Gear Hulk, you know, draw them to death deck, this just destroys them in that regard. It just does so much damage. Such a powerful card in that. I like Urgent Necropsy, that one, and it combos with what's the other card, Maynard? Where did I put it in the deal?
Follow the Bodies, or
Follow the Bodies, or there's another one. It's the Hush one. It's the one that actually creates.
Oh yeah, Flotsam.
Yeah, Flotsam. Thank you. So the two card combo is Flotsam with Urgent Necropsy, and that becomes a standard Ruinous Ultimatum. If you guys haven't tried that for like 18 mana, I think it is total. So actually, I think it's more than that. No, it's 20 mana total. So the Flotsam costs 8 mana. So between those two, you cast Flotsam, you get the gems on the board, use Urgent Necropsy, you do the Collect Evidence, which we never talked about, right? Which is a dumb thing. Don't get me started on that. Don't get me started on that. That one's so dumb.
I left that out on purpose.
Yeah, this is the one that actually does it okay. I mean, it's worth it in that card combo. You nuke their side of the board except for Vanguards. It is so oppressive. And the one that we haven't really, Aurelia's Vindicator's solid. Kip, Knowledge is Power, is absolutely a badass card. Oh my god, that card is so powerful. People are lower on it than I think they should be. I think once they kind of settle in, it will settle into the bigger decks that are going to dominate stuff. But Assemble the Players is the other card that is up there with Connecting the Dots. That card is so stupid good. It is so good. Connecting the Dots, hit the board, Assemble the Players into your exile, get Assemble the Players for free. Now get a creature on the board that's six or power or less for free. You get your Aurelia's Vindicator for free every turn. Yes, yes. And then you, what's exile stuff for me? Oh, you get Jaleva. Well, you got to cast Jaleva, so that doesn't really matter. But did you get full mana? Hold on. Sorry, I'm just talking to myself. No, it just moves.
I feel like we need to pause the podcast because everybody listening is pausing and writing down what you just said.
Yeah, yeah. This is what I do. I just brew stuff all day long. Oh, this works with that, and this synergy goes here, and that goes. But Assemble the Players is absolutely a chase card. If you guys don't have it, get it. And if you have it and aren't playing with it, do yourself a favor. Go win. Just go win.
The one I've been looking at. Putting in everything I can do, especially since I've been messing with Ugin, is Steam Core Scholar, which just it ramps up and pumps mana and most importantly loyalty. And it's small enough that Greg doesn't really pay attention to it. So it's a 2/2. It sits there. He doesn't try to get rid of it. And it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And so I've been putting that everything that I can put it in. Unfortunately, it's blue. It feels like it should be colorless, but it's blue. And so
you know what's funny?
Yeah, that's the one I've been playing a lot.
You know what's funny, nerd? You mentioned the name. I'm like, oh, and I looked it up, and it says new on it. My collection. I haven't played. I haven't even touched it yet. Yeah, so many good cards.
Chasing that one too. God, there's a lot of rares I'm still on the chase for this set, and I still already have a lot of. I feel like the best cards, and there's still so many more I need to still crack open.
Yeah.
Have you? Before I go into asking you guys about the state of the game. Have you noticed that in this set, does it feel like a lot of these cards just do a lot? Mm-hmm. Like instead of doing one or two or three things, these cards do three or four or five things.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. One of the things that I've tried to evaluate, and now that we have WebCore here as the devs, shout out to WebCore. I don't know if it's engineered, if it's on purpose, but it feels like set-wise. I know they do this in paper, but when the standard sets rotate, there's usually kind of that one that has a lot of utility to it to replace the set that's going out. That set that's going out this October for us, September in paper, is Streets of New Capenna. So when SNC leaves, that will hurt my heart. You know, that is absolutely the best set for me, as far especially for noobs as well. With all the uncommons that are just so good. You want to talk about a great mechanic, let's talk about Casualty. Casualty rocks, right? And that set, when it goes out, needs a replacement. And I believe that this set is specifically the answer to that, which so far it looks like it could be. My immediate take is, because I haven't broken everything, I think it's not as good as SNC, of course. SNC is still better just because of the core mechanics. But that said, it's up there. It's definitely got the most rare chase cards in any set in standard right now, in my opinion. So I think that's where the power shift moved.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, Mean.
Oh, no. The three sets that WebCore have given us so far have all been pretty solid. Yeah. I don't think there's one that's like super weak or anything. Even Wilds of Eldraine still has some monster cards in it. Tortoise, of course. And I think we'll probably be looking at more cards from that set once we get that Streets of New Capenna rotation out, because right now everyone's playing with Sleep with the Fishes, but once they don't have that, Ariat is probably going to be very good for people for that permanent, like can't attack, can't block. So, or is it just can't attack? I can't remember, but either way, yeah, we're just going to be looking for things for a while to fill those gaps that the Streets of New Capenna is going to leave behind. And these sets that we've kind of overlooked being this giant standard, we're definitely going to probably have to dig in there and look at what we haven't played enough with from these sets so far.
So Main Loop, you actually kind of led me nicely in a segue to ask how do you guys feel about the state of the game as it is right now? With WebCore's had a few sets. I've been enjoying what they've been putting out. It seems like there's more energy in everything related to MTGPQ. I'll start with you, Robin. How do you feel the game is right now?
Yeah, you know what? From my experience, I think these folks here are very receptive to the, you know, the players. From my experience with the people in my coalition, they've been able to reach out and get, you know, they get their questions answered quickly. I think that's what we want as players, right? We want to make sure that we're heard. We want to make sure that we have a voice and that they're taking us seriously. And that's really one of the things that I really appreciate here about WebCorp. They've done a great job with that part. And, you know, a second part that I do like is they're doing a great job paying attention to us as the content creators. And that sounds a little bit self-serving, right? But I think a lot of times we have to take a look at the entire landscape, right? And people that are putting out videos are helping your product. So in this way, helping them to help your product is a great thing. And I think that's something that WebCorp has done a tremendous job of acknowledging. So I'm super excited for the future. It's just a good direction that we're on.
I'll go to you, Main Luke. I want Gaz to close it out. Yeah, Main Luke.
Shut up, Gaz.
So without getting into too much of the specifics, and I don't even think we're allowed to, but the fact that we have a feeling that the devs are listening to us, and we have like kind of a really good amount of communication now between, like, it really felt by the end of Octagon's run that they just really weren't, they were checked out and weren't really paying much attention to the game anymore. So everybody was really kind of down on the game, and we're just like counting the days for its demise. But I feel like with WebCorp coming in and really kind of making sure that things are being heard, and it just really helped me kind of reinvigorate my enjoyment of the game as well. And I think it's helped a lot for people in our communities on the Discord and all that. So, I mean, there's still plenty of things that we need to get back on the right track. But with all the bug fixes, all the quality of life improvements as of late, feels really good. And they're pumping out the content almost more than we could even keep up with a lot of the time.
So what are you saying that for? What are you doing? Be quiet, dude. They're going to listen to this.
Almost, not quite. I got plenty of free time to break stuff. But I just feel that the future of the game feels pretty bright for me right now.
I want to piggyback off what Maynard said there as far as the end of Octagon's days. You know, bless their heart. And I have nothing bad to say against Octagon. As an entrepreneur, someone who runs major businesses and run, you know, big businesses over the course of my career, it's hard to run a business. It's hard to keep things afloat, especially when we went through a pandemic like they did. They bore that result. In fact, they should have profited during that time frame, because what else were people doing except for playing games? But towards the end, like, my content was more focused at, dear God, we need more players. That, like, we couldn't even fill weekend coalition events by the end of that time frame, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't get the board to flip. We didn't get the events to fill up and set a second bracket. That's scary, man. That's coming from, there's another game that I started playing during the pandemic, really, that I fell in love with, another Magic related game. It died on the vine, and it died quickly just because it didn't get the support it needed from Wizards of the Coast. And that's one thing that this game has to do on its own. In the beginning, it had a little bit of support from Wizards. It doesn't now. And it hasn't for years, right? And it won't in the foreseeable future. All of that to say, where's the game now? How optimistic as a group do we feel right now with the way the devs have been handling stuff, the communication, the bug fixes, just everything that was already been said here? It just feels, it's hope at the end of the day. I'm a football fan. I'm an Arizona Cardinals football fan. If you guys know anything about football, the Cardinals suck. So every now and then when we get a good team that actually has a chance at winning games, or at least has a winning season, we get this hope in us that's just like, it's great. We still are Cardinals fans, so we know eventually we're going to lose. But with that said, we like the hope. With the way they've been handling stuff so far, I think it's put us in a really good position. So I'm really optimistic. I think everybody's really hopeful going forward. The only other thing that I'll say on this is there's, to the state of the game itself, the 3-year meta has to have a hard evaluation. We have such a big pool of cards right now that my concern for new players when they come in is that the standard size and the power can be difficult for newer players to get a foothold to be able to compete. And at the end of the day, this is a game of solitaire. We're playing by ourselves, right? We're not actively live playing somebody else. So there really is no real meta, although the meta will consist of what wins easiest, right? So I guess there is, but the AI can't manage it. So because of that, if newer players lose too much, right? If they don't get enough wins, if they don't get enough endorphin dumps, right? They don't get that dopamine, right? They won't continue to play the game, and we want them to get addicted in a good way. And for me, the one big thing that's missing in the state of the game right now is the WebCore group acknowledging and putting together either internally a Discord server and pushing people to it to get that engagement, or they have the forums, but it's not the same, or push a generic group that's out there. This is one thing too, to kudos to you, Nerd. Nerd, that's so funny every time I say it, because I'm supposed to say what's up, Nerd, every time I say that. Is that all of the closed off kind of groups were kind of islands unto themselves, and now everybody's kind of opening up and opening their borders, if you will, and letting people in. And I think that's great. The more of a community we can have, the more different views and alternate perspectives and support we can get for new players, the more that's going to help get that in. That's the big thing for the game. I don't care how many changes they make.
That's huge. Yeah.
We got to get new players in, and we got to create an experience for them that's going to keep them retained, enjoying, entertained, and just loving the game as much as we do.
Yeah, you get thrown into the deep end way too quickly in this game.
Yeah.
Getting the adding that third dimension of the social experience that is now becoming, I don't know if I want to say unfortunately, but it's now becoming a major part of this game is the meta that the players have built up around it, considering the structure that Lars has come up with, the and the data that he produces for all of us.
Shout out to Lars, man. Lars is the best. Absolutely.
the way that the Discords have now kind of, we're kind of daisy chaining a little bit, and we're all visiting and we're all friendly, and that's nice and supportive. I know that we've told, we have one guy who does a lot of our recruiting for Gods of Theros, Call Me Clem, and he is now not just recruiting for us, but he's saying, look, if you don't want to join Gods of Theros, there's a huge Discord community. Join somebody.
Yeah.
Be part of this.
Right.
Be social. Everybody would love to have you. Be part of the big picture.
Yeah.
And you're going to enjoy everything well. And that's almost like aimed towards player retention.
Right.
So it's one of those things where we don't want to think, gosh, we have to retain our players. We want to think, how are we going to grow our players?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. How are we going to manage them to make sure they have the best experience possible? How can we support them? And then when the player base is big enough, you'll probably get into a little more competition. This is a separate topic for another time too, but the drama in so much of this game, when I first came in, it was so toxic. And I just didn't understand it. And I, leaving on a positive note for this, the community is so giving now. I think we've kind of all matured and realized, and I try to reinforce for everybody else, guys, it's a game. It's a stupid game. We love this stupid game, but at the end of the day, just be cool, right? Like the Gods of Theros, rule number one, when you join the Gods of Theros, I have a few more words to describe what you aren't supposed to be when you join into my service, because we keep it PG-13. But that said, I think just the overall community has really embraced that. We have a couple of bad apples every now and then, and the community is pretty good at checking them when they need to. But overall, I think the consensus has shifted from, hey, how does our team get and keep players and our team to beat everybody else, to, hey, how do we get and retain new people to play in general? We don't care where they're playing as long as they're getting the answers they need, the feeling, the support they have. And I'll give a quick shout out to one player in particular, Chewable Trash. I hate calling her that, but it's CT. I call her CT because I don't like calling her trash. But her nickname on the game is Chewable Trash. And when she first came on board, she was so new, she had a really negative experience. And I myself and a bunch of other folks reached out like, hey, that's not the norm. That's not what it is. And that turned her around and she stuck with it. Well, she has another game that she's part of that she's just gushing about the community that we have and how awesome it is. And as a result, it's brought like 5 or 6 new players into the game.
Nice.
Whether they stick or not, cool. That's up to the game to do. But that experience to where people were referring other folks, like the old network marketing days. If you get two and they get two and they get two, right? We're going to dominate the world. That's real. Like that word of mouth advertising starts with creating a great player experience. And the devs are doing that. WebCore starting to get that turned around to the point where we are starting to see more word of mouth exposure. And as a marketer, that's worth its weight in absolute gold. So I'm glad to see it. That's great, man.
I think the community is a really big, important thing with the game. And one of the things that I've been thinking about as you're talking, I think that our developers with WebCore, especially, they're very good about listening to the people, as I mentioned, and really being in touch with the player. And I think you just have to look pretty much at that Julie card that we got recently, right? When Julie passed, we got a card, you know, with her image on there. And it's just a beautiful way to say, hey, we appreciate the players this much. And it's a good sign going forward, I think.
Great call. 100%.
Yeah.
Well, so classy. What a classy move, man. So good.
So the state of the game is hopeful.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining. This is our first roundtable. I think it went well. Well, hopefully we'll get Nalthazar in next time. We're going to try to make sure that the schedules work out where we get him in here because I think he'd have a lot of fun here.
Shout out to Nalthazar.
So Paladin Robin, where do we find your content?
Yeah, you can go on YouTube and search for me out there. I am I'm in a couple of other places, but mainly I'm at the YouTube handle, the Planeswalker Coach. That's where I usually put up my things. I'll put something every Tuesday, usually a new deck that I've used, championship level decks, of course. And then I like to do the reviews as well. And you know, I kind of just put everything out there. All the new content will be out on Thursdays. And all of the championship decks are Tuesdays.
Main Loop.
I am at YouTube. I think I'm at Main Loop on YouTube. But just look up Main Loop MTGPQ on the YouTube search and I should show up.
And Gazmaster.
I am on all the channels. I'm on YouTube. You can find me at youtube.com/Gazmaster, G-O-Z, master. Master. And I'm also on Facebook. I have a Facebook page there that you guys can look up. It's Gazmaster as well. I think it's just facebook.com/Gazmaster. And you can connect with me there. And of course, in the Discords, which is, I think it's discord.com/Gazmaster. That server is a generic server. We do no cross recruiting or anything like that. We do have a place for folks to come and get their answers. Maynard's in there. Paladin's in there. Paladin's newer to the Discord, at least in our servers and stuff. It's really awesome to have him there. Nerd Thuggery's there. We just have a ton of fun in there. It's good conversation. Conversations, good people. Highly encourage it.
It is. And if you're listening to me, you know where to find me. I'm Nerd Thuggery. This is MTG PodQuest. And thanks a lot, guys. Episode one, I'd say it's a success. Good job.
Thanks, man. Thanks,
thanks for having me.
Thanks for putting it together.
Yeah, man. Shout out to Nerd Thuggery. What a gentleman and a kind host just giving us all the spotlight. But applause and, you know, standing ovation for you, dude. Great job of putting this together. I really appreciate it, man.
That's very nice of you. I'm going to edit all of that out.
Put it at the front. That's actually the full podcast. Just praise for Nerd Thuggery.
That was a lot of fun to put together. Thanks again to Gazmaster, Main Loop, and Paladin Robin for lending their time to this project. If anybody has any questions or subjects you would like to hear this group address, and Nalthi's part of this also, and I anticipate we'll have guests from the community as well. But if you have any questions or subjects you'd like us to tackle, just at me on your Discord server. I'm probably in there. Or make a suggestion on the podcast channel in the Gods of Theros Discord. We'll see you next time. Thanks, folks.